Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:36 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 11th. I thought we'd kick off today with Bitcoin. We've had the halvening, so that means that that should start to bring the limited supply argument back into focus, because the reward for successfully mining a block of Bitcoin has now halved, and it's going to halve again in 4 years' time. And when we think about everything else in the world, well, other than the precious metals, then the quantity of money being printed, the deficits that are being recorded all over the world, they're going in the exact opposite direction. Rather than supply being limited, it seems that there is limitless supply. And that kind of divergence and comparison is something that should help to attract interest. But nonetheless, the price was down $1,350 today. Now, I think it's impressive that we had this remarkable bounce back from the 4,000 level to 10,000 in the space of less than 2 months. Paul Tudor Jones announced over the weekend, or perhaps right at the end of last week, that he has deployed about 2% of his net worth into Bitcoin. So we know who's been buying on the way up. Now, this was obviously a bear raid. It collapsed right off the open on Sunday, and it's one thing that we one thing that we can certainly see in Bitcoin is something that you see in a lot of commodity markets, where you have reasonably thin trading. That particularly when there is some illiquidity, then a trader will move in, put in a big short position, trigger the stops, come back in and cover, and then they're afforded a better opportunity to in fact buy it. Well, we've definitely had some buy the rumor, sell the news, so we may be in for some consolidation. $10,000 has been an area of resistance over the course of the last 7 months, so it's going to have to be surmounted on a sustained basis in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term. So what happens over the next few days is probably going to give us a lot of information about just how much appetite there is to support Bitcoin above that level. Now, when we look at the gold price, it's been going sideways for the last month, and it was in mildly negative territory in here today. Now, when we think about the internal dynamics of the range, one thing that we can certainly say is that the most recent dynamic was on the upside. But the other thing that's important to, I think, highlight is that this is a clear pennant shape, that we have a sequence of higher reaction lows, we've got sequence of lower rally highs over the course of the last month. Following a big pop on the upside here, then the next question is, are we going to see the next resolution on the upside, or are we going to see a reversion back towards the mean? Again, it's a limited supply argument, so that there is potential for some additional upside in here, but we're going to have to see it pop on the upside in a dynamic manner in order to really confirm that that is indeed going to be the case. Now, the gold shares had popped on the upside over the course of the last week, and they were in negative territory in here today. Now, this has been one of the most impressive rebounds of any stock market sector over the course of the last 6 weeks. Now, there were a number of shares on the S&P 500 making new all-time highs in here today. I think there was about 18 of them. The MSCI was one, Fastenal was another, Nvidia is another. Of course, Nvidia is one of the big producers of graphics chips, which go into mining a number of the cryptocurrencies. It has certainly popped right back and is pushing on to new high ground in here. And I think that is clear and sustained relative strength. And we just do not have that many shares that are pushing on the upside in here right now. Fastenal has been a company that circumvented much of the supply chain interruptions from the coronavirus. They got out ahead of the virus and secured inventory well ahead of time, and therefore they have been in a rather charmed position since, and that has allowed the company to push on to new high ground. Citrix Systems is one of the original cloud computing companies, it barely pulled back and, in fact, popped right on the upside as soon as the lockdown started. So it was the go-to share in the cloud computing sector to benefit from the overall environment. But when we think about what's going on Wall Street, well, the S&P 500 is now within 70 points of the psychological 3000 level and the region of its trend mean. What I thought was particularly interesting about Mike Wilson's report this morning was that he's also looking at the 1000-day moving average. And I think a lot of people are going to start looking at this. I've been starting to look at 1000-day moving averages for about 2 years now, because they are a really quite useful, I think, lodestone in the secular bull markets, or at least in attempting to monitor secular bull markets. And markets don't generally spend a lot of time below them when we're in a secular bull market. So as we come up to the first area of real potential resistance around the 3000 level, then in an ideal scenario, the 1000-day moving average is going to represent an area of support, which is approximately 300 points or 10% below current levels. Now, the NASDAQ has obviously clearly outperformed, and it is coming back within really quite close proximity of its all-time peak. And of course, that all-time peak was just below the psychological 10,000 level. So let's just think about, well, what is propelling this incredible advance? Well, on the one hand, it is the fact that central bank balance sheets have expanded at an incredibly quick rate, tacking on almost $4 trillion in the space of 2 months is a massive liquidity infusion. It is worth highlighting, though, that the supply of new money coming into the market has stopped. And part of the reason for that is because of the US dollar. And the dollar was in really quite firm territory in here today. You don't see it particularly on the dollar index because the euro was not quite as weak as the yen. But the yen was down in, or the dollar was up in a dynamic manner against the Japanese yen in here today. It has now clearly broken the sequence of lower rally highs over the course of the last 6 weeks. And I think there is clear potential here that the yen is going to get weaker. Well, that is acting as something of a support for the Nikkei, and the Nikkei has pushed back above the 20,000 level. That's a big psychological barrier. Now the big question is it going to be able to hold it? The first area of it was, well, 20,000 was the first area of potential resistance. The next one is the region of the 200-day moving average around the 22,000 area, and subsequently 20,000 should offer support. We really shouldn't see the market drop below the low around 16,000 if this is still a recovery scenario. But we've had a lot of movement in currencies in here today. And what I think this is clearly signaling is that not every country is going to come out of its lockdowns in a healthy situation, or that they're going to be able to quickly get their number of cases under control. Well, Brazil is certainly one of the weaker currencies right now, the real, and it's a clear trend, and we can then, I think, draw the conclusion that investors do not believe that Brazil has got a handle on it. The Indian rupee remains weak. It hasn't really rallied to any discernible extent, and this is still a trending environment. In fact, the dollar has found support in the region of around 75. That was the previous peak, and there is still scope for additional downside for the rupee. I'm rather worried about the performance of the banking sector, and it is pulling back again now. It's encountered resistance in the region of 25,000. It really does need to hold the 20,000 level, but I think one of the bigger pictures here, or the bigger points is we had a much larger pullback than anything on Wall Street, for example, and subsequently a modest rebound. And there is the potential for some volatile ranging, even in a bull market scenario. And with against a background of over a billion people locked down, a healthcare system that is undeveloped, countered by the argument that it's a very young population to begin with, these are all unknowns. But the banking sector was looking troublesome before the coronavirus problem, and it's arguable whether they've done enough to solve those problems in the short term. It's also worth keeping an eye on the Chinese renminbi, because it was also weaker in here today and in a reasonably dynamic manner. But I do think we need to take some perspective here. 7 had been an area of support for the renminbi, and now it's looking increasingly like an area of resistance. This looks like a bullish chart for the dollar, and there is clear potential that the renminbi is going to weaken further from here. Well, against a background where the yen, the real, the rupee, and the renminbi are all weakening, it would be an easy conclusion to think that all currencies are weakening. But the Australian dollar has been rallying now for most of the last 2 months. It has closed its overextension relative to the trend mean, and we have something of a pause going on right now. The Philippine peso has, in fact, moved to a new recovery high against the dollar in here, and this is breaking out now. And that is, I think, a rather surprising development. And then the Taiwan dollar as well has also been able to break on the upside against the dollar. So there are pockets of outperformance relative to the US dollar. But the reality here is that the return on capital the bond markets in the US and in the stock market is better than just about anywhere else, for the moment at least, because of the higher interest rate environment on the one hand, but also the very swift monetary and fiscal response to the threat from the Federal Reserve and the US government. And that has been completely outsized relative to everything else that the world, that other countries are deploying. And then, of course, we have the challenges in Europe. Now, the European stock market has not rebounded to nearly the same extent as Wall Street has. In fact, it looks a lot closer to the performance of the Indian banking sector. But the reality is that outside of the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ and perhaps the Dow Jones Industrials, just about everything else just has this exact same chart pattern, where we've had these huge pullbacks and relatively modest rebounds relative to the size of the pullback. And also, where we have had rebounds, we're now in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading ranges. It's the first area of significant potential resistance. But the bigger picture in Europe is there is a constitutional crisis about to erupt. When we think about the fact that the German Constitutional Court has ordered the Bundesbank not to participate in the ECB's purchasing rounds. But it's rather academic, because the ECB is quite within its rights to simply do the purchasing itself. It has been almost a courtesy to the central banks of constituent members to ask them to partner with the ECB in terms of the purchases that they make of bonds. There is nothing stopping the ECB from doing the job themselves in exactly the same way that the Federal Reserve does. But it is going to open up a chasm in terms of the argument about exactly what is the European Union. Is it a community of individual states, or is it a nascent super state? And the Constitutional Court in Germany is looking increasingly likely to push that question. There has been very much an attitude adopted towards Europe of don't ask, don't tell. But this is going to bring it to the forefront. The banking sector in Europe looks dire. It has barely bounced and it continues to look weak. The fact that spreads on the periphery have been widening, and there isn't a great deal of evidence yet to suggest that there is clear action to contain that move, it suggests that the ECB is going to have to make some pretty big decisions about forcing the hand of constituent governments and constituent central banks. And I don't think that that is really priced into the market. Or perhaps it is being priced into the market, and that's why Europe has been underperforming by such a wide margin. Unfortunately, this isn't something that's going to come to a favorable resolution in the short term, and it does suggest that Europe is going to underperform for the foreseeable future. And I think when we think about what is likely, well, we know that there's a massive wall of liquidity hitting the market. And that has certainly helped to stoke interest in internet-related stocks and stocks that provide cloud services or provide services over the internet that have some form of entertainment value. But the wider global economy is on life support. And while the counting of unemployed people varies in different countries, one has to question whether all the people that have been temporarily laid off or furloughed are going to be hired back. When we think about changed living situations, working situations, and social situations that various countries are going to have, then we're probably in for a long slog to get back to the kind of employment figures that we had in January, which I think it's worth remembering were the best seen in decades in a number of countries. Then, of course, just circling back to Europe, they've always had high unemployment. And this is a situation that is just not going to help that situation. And then, of course, there is the fact that a number of countries, particularly the USA, have relied on elderly people, to remain in their jobs or take jobs while they've been in unemployment, while they've been taking their pensions in order to supplement the workforce. Well, this could well be the catalyst for a lot of elderly people to simply retire. And then that takes productive members of society and completely out of the loop and puts them on the debit side. Now, that is obviously something that is going to become a significant issue for a number of countries. It's also worth highlighting that the Nasdaq Biotech Index has broken on the upside. And this is where I think investors are starting to bet. It's not simply about liquidity, but that the solution to the world's problems is going to come through from biotechnology. And the streamlining of the permitting process is something that is going to greatly accelerate the pace of technological innovation in the biotech sector. If we had to make a clearly bullish case for why the stock market can recover and that people will get back to social environments faster, it's because of technology and the solutions that it provides. And of course, that is assuming that they are successful. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.